Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, just this past Friday, you and I were discussing the possibility of a ceasefire to allow the wheat to be moved through the Red Sea. And as it turned out, there's already been, and you weren't, you know, too reassured that that was going to happen. And sure enough, right away, there's been an attack on the wheat shipment already.
Well, I think it was an attack on the Odessa port.
Yes, the port. the port.
Which was viewed as potentially a violation of the agreement that Russia had with Ukraine and UN about keeping the ports open for the shipments. I don't think that attack actually affected a shipment of wheat. But the Black Sea, now there is further talk about, and Russia is indicating that they will escort ships. We'll see. I mean, Russia seems to be exercising some pretty effective political processes. I think, number one, they are going to support wheat movements because of the public opinion, particularly in Western Europe and in North Africa, about that. And secondly, I noticed that it just came across the wire that Russia has indicated that they're going to restrict capacity on the Nord Stream pipeline to 20% of its capacity from now on, which is going to very much jeopardize the ability of Germany and others to store gas for the winter. That you can store gas in caves and other things to make gas available in the winter for heating. And so Russia has decided to constrain the supply of gas now going to Europe, which is going to create a great deal of political backlash in Europe over the winter if there is, in fact, a significant shortage of gas. So I think Russia is operating with a great deal of political acumen. And my guess is that, one, wheat will move, and two, gas will not.
So Sandy, so the Donbas region that you've been talking about over and over and over and over and over, that is the ground zero in all of this, because the fight continues. And how big is the Donbas region, and is that the most crucial piece of land in this war?
Well, I think right from the beginning, when Russia had Ukraine surrounded but troops and had not yet invaded, it was clear that one of the important negotiating elements they wanted to address was the situation in Donbas. There had been the Minsk agreement that related to the Donbas that had been reached in 2014, which essentially was an agreement that would provide the Donbas, which is Luhansk and Donetsk, and some of the regions around that, with a level of autonomy. They would be part of Ukraine, but would be autonomous from it in many respects. And Russia was saying they were very interested in that region because it was filled with Russian speakers and Russian sympathizers, and that those people were being discriminated against. Donbas also is sort of the industrial center of Ukraine, so it has strategic importance as well. So it was always important. The initial demands from Russia related to the annexation that had occurred in Crimea and its recognition by Ukraine and the rest of the world, and as well this resolution of the situation in the Donbas. And then the third thing was neutrality for Ukraine, and the undercurrent issue seemed to be a change in the government from Zelensky to a less nationalistic government. I think all of those things are still on the table for Russia. I think all of those things are the important element in this conflict.
You know, Sandy, the more I read what we're hearing about Russia and Russia is struggling mightily, wherever you read the comments coming from the American side of things, it's that Russia's having a tough go of it. They're running out of this, they're running out of that. But you talked about this from the onset. We're going to get information that may not be true. And the information that we're getting on our side of things always shows Russia to be struggling and having a tough go of it, Sandy, and almost ready, you know, to collapse because of the weaponry that we keep sending, and the munitions factories are being destroyed for Russia. But for somebody who's apparently having as much trouble as Russia is having, they're still moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, all the military analysts point out that with respect to the Donbas region, Russia is militarily taking over the Donbas, and the momentum in the conflict in Ukraine as it centers in the Donbas, the momentum favors Russia right now. And so, you know, we can talk about how it is that Russia might be having difficulties, but their difficulties are not making it impossible for them to proceed in the Donbas. And I think that most military observers will say, when they speak off the record, that Russia continues to show some restraint in its military approach to the war in Ukraine, and that they could, in fact, be inflicting far greater damage on Ukraine than they are currently, even with their intensive artillery use in the Donbas. So I continue to say that unless the United States and the Western countries were willing to put troops into Russia, unless they were willing to provide air cover to Ukraine, and those things would put them directly in conflict with Russia and would create a NATO/Russia conflict. Unless they do those things, the outcome of this Ukraine war is preordained.
You know, Sandy. And yet you keep seeing a patchwork kind of thing that we are doing. Well, we need these, you know, the rocket launchers, and so we'll send them 12, right? You know, I don't know how many, what kind of impact 12 of them will have, but it's certainly not enough.
The number jumped to 16, but like 16, really?
I know. It's not funny, but Sandy, I mean, what are we trying to do? You know, if you really are all in on this thing, because you and I know we're not all in on it, but what are you accomplishing sending? Well, initially it said 12, so we made it 16. Well, they're going to run out of those immediately. They're not going to be able to shoot down enough of the rockets that Russia has in reserve. I mean, I just don't understand it. Why we just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. When you stated since early on in this, Sandy, that this would be a waste of time, other than the fact that we are kind of cleaning out our supplies, right? I mean,
we're sending a bunch of stuff. Some of it is dated stuff. You know, we're sending stuff that's been long in our inventory.
Right.
We've sent $8.3 billion, apparently, of military equipment, which worries me because the total amount of aid we're sending to Ukraine numbers apparently like $53 billion. So I worry about what's with the other $45 billion. And I worry that it's maybe being wasted in going into pockets much like it did in Afghanistan when we sent a bunch of aid to Afghanistan. But, you know, the problem with Ukraine is that we seem to be doing this for domestic and international political purposes and not because it represents a significant strategic interest on the part of the United States. So, you know, we're using this as sort of an Alamo-type situation to draw NATO together and to test the strength of that alliance and to maybe build up the strength of that alliance. But the longer this conflict goes on, and for instance, the more Russia uses its levers, like curtailing the volume of gas going through the Nord Stream pipeline down to 20% of its capacity, the more fragile that alliance is going to become. And we'll begin to see fractures in the European Union alliance with respect to its treatment, as well as NATO.
We've got to go to a break. You know, Sandy, we'll talk about this when we come back. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can join us. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.